that you have really zero understanding, and you try to understand, and you try to understand, and you don't, you are very frustrated, and in a way, it's afflicting. That's, by the way, one of the reasons why many people, when they start to learn Torah, and they have lofty goals and everything, and they get frustrated at the beginning, and they drop it. They just don't know, you know, it doesn't talk to me, it doesn't mean anything to me, it's too complicated, it's too hard. Sometimes they also fall on the wrong teacher, whatever it is. But the idea is that there is Yisurim in Torah. Also, some of the restrictions are not so comfortable, okay? You know, when you go in the rain, you know, for an hour to go to shul, and you're all wet, I'm not saying that they are suffering like, God forbid, something else in the hospital, but it's not the easiest thing. Okay, so that's the one. ארץ ישראל דכתיב כאשר יעשר איש את בנו השם אלוקיך מייסרקה וכתיב בטרק השם אלוקיך מביאך אל ארץ טובה. So ארץ ישראל was also what was given to us with Yisurim, which is also an interesting thing. We'll talk about all of them. והעולם הבא דכתיב כנר מצווה ותורה אור ודרך חיים תוכחת מוסר. And also the עולם הבא is through afflictions. So now let's stop you for a second. Yes, you wish, if you want. So let's talk about Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. So now, when we think about it, let's talk a little first about the concept. What kind of a concept is it? I'm giving you a gift, but you need to suffer in order to get it. So what kind of a gift is it? A gift is what? I love you. I want to reward you. I want to compensate you. I want to show you my feelings towards you. This is a gift. Gift should not be involved with any afflictions. So why would you call it gift? You can say, look, I gave you, awarded you, because of your suffering, I awarded you A, B, and C. But what does it mean it was a gift and it comes with afflictions? So that's question number one. Question number two is, why those three? Why Bedafka, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba? Why not Bet HaMikdash, I don't know, what else? Geula and Mashiach. Here, I came up with three things. Why בכוונה תורה ארץ ישראל אין עולם הבא?
Because it's eternal.
Because they are eternal. Okay. Okay. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. So, when you think about Yisurim, what comes to mind? We'll do an association game. When I say Yisurim, afflictions, what comes to mind?
Sickness,
illness,
falling,
pain,
surgery,
okay.
Falling.
Does anyone see anything good in suffering? I know it sounds strange.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Suffering is good for the soul.
Is what?
There's an English saying, suffering is good for the soul.
Suffering is good for the soul.
Develops the character.
I don't know who said it.
Okay.
It causes one to reflect.
Okay, reflect, balancing your character.
To grow,
okay.
No pain, no gain.
I was thinking that someone is going to say that. Very good. So, now I'm going to rephrase the question. Can you grow without it? To an extent.
It doesn't bring you to that honesty.
But it doesn't bring you to your max, which means we're going to institute a special prayer for what? For
suffering.
For suffering, right? We are missing tefillot, right? We should have another one. Okay? Now, but do you hear what you say? Because what you said was really true. We all know retroactively that any challenge in our lives, you can call it Yisurim, you can call it challenges, I don't care about the semantics now. Retroactively, after we overcame it, we see how strong we are. Without it, we will stay the same, or we will even go, we'll have some kind of regression. Which means, Yisurim, to some extent, are a good thing. Now, we are not looking for them, because we would like to grow without it, but retroactively, we might appreciate it. So that's just an idea.
Yeah, but not
that would be Yisurim.
Not extremes.
Oh, very good. So now we have degrees in Yisurim, right? Because some people will say, look, you know, that really, you know, helped me to grow, but you know, the suffering was so horrible and I just, very good. So we have degrees in Yisurim and we also have degrees in greatness, right? What did I overcome and what did it help me to, how did it help me to grow? Okay. Robert, you want to say something?
No, I just mentioned that often we don't appreciate things that we get
freely without paying, without any...
Okay, so now you are bringing a different perspective, not about growth, about appreciation, which means the idea of Isurim is not necessarily pain, sadness, illness, and all sorts of things, but rather challenges. Meaning, for example, take a look at Eretz Yisrael. I love this midrash. You know, Avram paid 400 shekels for what? For a cave in Hebron. And he bought the cave and he bought the field, right? And it's being documented in the Torah. And the midrash says, why do we need to know about all this discussion and negotiation and the tremendous amount of money that Avram paid? Answer, so if the nations will tell us you are thieves, we can show them the Torah. Shkoyech, such a waste of money I never saw in my life. Right?
It's ownership.
It's ownership, but it doesn't help us.
Right.
Which means it was a waste of money. Answer, it's good for us to know. We need to understand that Eretz Yisrael is something that we need to appreciate and we're going to work very hard for it. Now, maybe because it's eternity, maybe because God wants to have a special, that we'll have special relationships with those three things, that we will see some common denominators. But the idea is that when we talk about Yisurim, afflictions, it's not necessarily illnesses. That's what I want you to understand. Because sometimes you will see that mental illness, not mental, mental challenges, is also can cause suffering. We know people who are not, you know, kids who are not doing well in school. For them, it's Yisurim. That, by the way, can also impact physical illness. We all know that too. So the idea is that when the Torah, when the Talmud says that there are three things that were given to us, but there is a demand or there is an expectation for what? For challenges. So Torah is really on what? On the intellectual challenges. You learn Torah and it's hard. It's hard to understand and you need to plow. You need to really work hard. Eretz Yisrael is more of what? Of a physical suffering, physical challenges. You need to conquer it, you need to maintain it, you need to hold it, you need to develop it. You need to really make sure that the Eretz that was given to you, it's really being kept well. Mm-hmm. And Olam Haba is all-encompassing. It's basically the mitzvot that you do. How do you get to the Olam Haba? It's the mitzvot that you do and the actions that you take in your life. And how do you gain Olam Haba? By overcoming your human nature and doing the right thing. Sometimes the right things is very natural for us. And sometimes the right things is what? Is as far remote from what we want to do. Or far removed from what we want to do. So the idea, what the Gemara says, is basically you have three major gifts that required challenges. Now, when we think about it a little bit more, Is there a way to achieve greatness without challenges? Is there such a thing? Or is this just like a dream?
Don't we learn from challenges?
Right.
We have challenges.
Can I read a book? Can I read a book about your challenges and ask that I will have none? I'm pushing you, you're on the right target. Very good.
I think there are individuals who, yes, could. But on the whole...
One could be born to a position of power, greatness.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
But then you still have challenges, because sometimes you have family who's against you, or you have, you know, there's
maintain
always... Yeah,
okay, very good.
Position. Yeah.
So I'm going to say something that we're going to develop together. It will be maybe a little bit hard to listen to it at the beginning, but I think it will make sense. What were Moshe's challenges?
Moshe's?
Moshe's, yeah. What were Moshe's challenges?
Many.
Survival?
Survival.
Survival?
Yeah.
But what do you mean survival?
Well,
that's
why. He was put in Teva. I mean, he was put in the sea, so he almost died. So number one, since infancy he...
Okay, since infancy he was basically, he almost died. Okay, very good.
Separation, abandonment from his family.
Okay, very good. Okay, so he could spend many hours on the couch, right? So the thing is what? He's abandoned. He's being detached from his family, from his nation, not knowing his identity. He had an identity crisis. He's not an Egyptian, he's not Jewish, he's not Hebrew, he's not this, he's not that. He has no clue what he is. And then he's being appointed to be a leader of this for 40 years for this bunch of slaves that drives him crazy. So he has personal challenges, he has family challenges, he has national challenges, he has leadership challenges, and he has his own family at the end of Parashat Be'alotcha talking about him. Right? Miriam and Mo and Aaron. And later on, after Miriam dies, then this nation, this ungrateful nation, I'm sorry, I'm going to be now very dramatic, comes to him and what and complain they don't have water, no nothing, and they don't even come and comfort him after the death of his sister. Okay? That's Moshe, very good.
Oh, and he doesn't get to go into Eretz Israel.
Oh, that's not a challenge. That would be already a punishment.
That's a punishment.
That's not a challenge. A challenge is something, and we're going to, and that's what I'm going to do. A challenge is an opportunity. Punishment is probably a lesson. But we're going to develop it. And I'm being very honest, I'm not sure that I agree with everything I'm going to say. So it's also a work in progress. Now, let's take a look at Avraham. Did Avraham sacrifice a lot before he became Avraham? Answer?
Yeah.
Sure. They threw him into the fire. He was almost dead. It's exactly the same thing with Moshe, right? I mean, his own will. He was not forced to, but he himself was willing to do it. You would think that that's pretty good, right? He showed his commitment. How many trials Avraham had? Ten. Now, take a look at... Oh, we have... Ooh.
Wow, that's progress. Wow.
Okay, we have Etgar, which is a challenge. We have Nisayon. We'll call it a test or a trial. Then we have Onesh. Okay. Oh, and we have one more. Ah, Isurim. Suffering. Now, what is the difference between all of them? It's not synonymous, it's not the same, it's not a repetition, each one of them is a different thing. Oh, and one more.
Mishbeo.
Crisis.
Crisis.
Is that? No. Okay.
So,
yeah. It looks terrible.
ISIS.
Oh, all right.
ISIS.
That's it. Oh, thank you. Okay.
Is it a
not
is
not
it
yet?
Yeah, not I E.
Oh, it's a plural or
crisis.
Singular? You want plural or singular?
A crisis.
Let's just leave
okay.
It semi clear. Okay. Okay. Very good. Now, when we look at all of it, first and foremost, let's do it. We'll do it like a psychometric course now, okay? Yeah. Psychometric. We will go with what is not, okay? As you see, 1, 2, 3, nothing to do with physical afflictions necessarily, right? I can have an etgar to teach you. There's no suffering involved. I have a challenge to teach you. Why? Because my challenge is that I want to make sure that whatever we say, it's clear, and when you go home, you have a clear picture. So this is my etgar today. This is my etgar. I can experience now with you mashber. What's the mashber? I look at your faces, and you all you look at me in this amazement, like, what is he has anything to say? I don't understand a word he is saying. I'm going to be home, and I'm going to be all confused. So I have a mashber because I'm not overcoming my etgar. Okay? And then I have a nisayon. What's my trial? My test is, I want to pass the test of what? Of giving you a shoe that you can go home. I took the most trivial thing, okay? Now, my punishment, quote-unquote, if I fail the challenge, and I fail in my mashber, and I fail in my test, what can be my punishment? I can get a call and say, Rabbi, you know, with all due respect, next week just don't show up, please, okay? That would be my onish. Would I have Isurim? It depends. If I like to teach you, I will say, oh my gosh, no, what? And if I don't, I will say, yay, right? Okay? So that's a flow of actions. Now, when Avram was tested, time after time after time, but I would focus on what? On the 10th one, obviously the Akedah. Is the Akedah is Yisurei Nefesh? Soul suffering? Mental suffering?
Yes,
emotional
yes.
suffering? For
all
sure. And Hashem is doing that purposely. Kachna et bincha, et yachidcha, asher ahavta, et Yitzchak. Take your son, your only son, the son that you love, Yitzchak. It's like, take him and kill him, right? So take this soul, emotional suffering, but we call it what? It's not asara yisurim she'avar Avraham, we call it what? Asara nisyonot. Tests. Okay, so we call it tests. So why do we call it tests? Why not suffering? Why not punishment? Why it's a test? Because ness is what? Don't tell me miracle, please.
Flagpole.
What?
He's no cess to advertise.
Flag. It's a flag. 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 What do we do with the flag? We obviously
raise
it up. The idea of Nisayon is to raise you up, which means there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity. You received an opportunity, and it all depends on you. What are you going to do with it? It's not necessarily cause you pain. Nisayon can be many things. Okay, Nisayon really can be many, many different things. Some of it involves pain, and some of it does not involve too much pain. But there is a test. But the purpose of the test is not to punish you. The purpose of the test is to reveal the hidden energy, the hidden power, the hidden capabilities that you have that probably will not come out without the test. I'll give you an example. This is not so much of a test, but this is about a miracle. Did you ask yourself why in the world we needed Kriyat Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea? Why would God do that? God must speak. 10 plagues. The Egyptians told the Jewish people, get out of here. Just please, Paro begged them, get out. They gave them all the gold and the silver and the dresses and everything. They had everything. Was great. Why do we need the Nes Kriyat Yamsuf?
They had to get across the sea to save themselves.
No,
but why should they chase them? God strengthened Pharaoh's heart that he can start chasing the Jewish people. Leave him alone.
Punishment.
Oh, so one is punishment, but isn't that enough? The 10 plagues must speak with the ten punishments?
No, because he came back and he tried again.
But God strengthened his heart. Why did he do that?
Wait, are you asking a question about Paro? Why did Hashem give this test to Paro?
No, why Hashem strengthened Pharaoh's heart that he will chase the Jewish people and be drowned into the sea? Yes, why do we need it? Paro is not a threat anymore, Gamanu. He told them, go out, get out of here. Now, so why to do that? Answer, I'll give you the answer. That's the Ibn Ezra in the 11th century. Psychologically, I think is one of the most deep answers. He says the Jewish people will not be able to be free without seeing their enslavers dead. They will never be able to set free knowing
that
their enslavers can someday can
come
after them.
It's like the Eichmann challenge.
Many times, and this is just based on a research I read once, it was many years ago, that's also an issue from time to time with abused women and abused children. If they know that the abuser is still alive and can get to them, they will not be able to set free, or they will go back to him. Which is, and the Ibn Ezra, 11th century, already talks about it in Parashat Beshalach, the splitting of the sea. He says the Bnei Israel had to see et Mitzrayim met al Sfat Hayam. To the extent that the Midrash said something interesting, that everyone saw his enslaver dead. Now obviously it's an exaggeration because you can't, but the idea, because if your enslaver was a firstborn, he's already dead in Egypt. But the idea is that they had to see that they are gone. That's it. So the idea of a nisayon, of a this ness, it's an opportunity for you to what? To be set free and to set free your capabilities to grow as a person. So that's the nisayon. That's Avraham. That's the esara nisyonot שהקדוש ברוך הוא also ניסה את בני ישראל, הם בני ישראל ניסו אותו. Which means there is this reciprocity in terms of tribes. I want you to prove yourself. Prove it to me. That's one of the ideas of tests. I'm giving you a test in your classroom. Why? I want you to prove that A, you understood the knowledge, and B, I want to know who is the brightest kid in the class. Okay? So that's the nisayon and the test and the mivhan. Now, what is etgar? What is etgar? It's a challenge. What will be the English definition for a challenge?
Wouldn't it be some type of a gauge or measurement where you're...
If someone is being... I mean, look, it's not my mother tongue, so I'm asking you. What's the definition for for the word challenge?
A task to overcome.
A what?
A task.
A task to overcome. Okay, so that's the definition.
Situation.
A definition for a challenge, or it can be a situation, right? You don't know the definition? Me neither, by the way, so don't feel bad. But that the thing is, do you know that the definition of a challenge? You can look at the Google, right? You can know in a minute.
It's something that you're up against. I mean,
here, that's trying to use an example. I need a definition.
An obstacle to overcome.
So we saw something like that, the task to overcome or an obstacle to overcome. No? Okay, we are looking. Okay, yes.
There's two definitions.
Good.
One says a call to take part in a contest or competition, especially a duel.
Okay.
So that's with someone else.
Uh-huh.
And the other says an objection or query as to the truth of something, often with an implicit demand for proof.
Hmm. That will be a definition of challenge.
Yeah, that's not
that's
very
a
good.
That's a definition of challenge.
Interesting.
How about a situation that elicits in the individual or in the group or an effort to rise above, something like that, or to
okay.
to but deal with it or to cope with it or to...
Okay,
challenge
good.
Challenge is to prove.
Okay, so when I say challenge yourself, right? You remember those things on Facebook? The challenge that, you know, many challenges that, you know, you need to put your head in a cold water and what it was all those crazy things. And the ice thing, whatever. Challenge yourself.
Above you, something above your comfort level.
Oh, challenge yourself is to go out of the comfort zone. Very good. Especially in sport. You see, challenge yourself. Also in yeshiva, okay, challenge yourself. Show me that you can learn a little bit more. In sport, it's definitely, you know, I'm going to challenge myself and I'm going to be whatever, an NBA star. Mm. Is to go out of your comfort zone by your own, and this is, I thought that that would be the definition, by your own wishes. I am making the decision to what? To challenge myself. A challenge is not necessarily, I think an obstacle that is being in front of you, it's more of a nisayon. Someone is staging the situation and he puts you there and he sees what you have to do. And guys, I'm taking it upon myself a challenge today. Also in Hebrew. אני מאתגר את עצמי. Not necessarily vis-a-vis someone else. אני מאתגר את עצמי. יש לי אתגר, I have a challenge.
So a nisayon, it comes from far outside of you and it challenges you.
That's my theory. I'm not saying it's Torah Mesinai at all. This is the theory that I have already for some time. So the thing is, אתגר is more... I will put it like me, okay? Me. And here it's from above. Okay. So, when I talk about etgarim, sometimes we put ourselves in a situation in order to challenge ourselves. Then it turns against us, and then what do we feel? Oh, it's yisurim, it's a punishment, it's it. And we sometimes forget that what? That we did it to what? To ourselves, okay? But the idea is that every person has this, you can call it ego, or you can call it a competitive feeling inside, that without that, by the way, we will achieve zero. We will accomplish zero. Sometimes people who do not challenge themselves, they stay in their place, and we know there is no such a thing to stay in your place. I'm sure everyone here read, or at least all of you, or most of you, or all of you, read this, you know, from good to great. You read that book?
No.
No?
Wrote it.
It's a good book. It's a great book.
Who
I don't know. It's
it?
A good...
I know, you remember the title. You don't need
yeah.
to...
Yeah, from good to great, and basically saying that the enemy of great is good. Why? Because when you ask someone, how is everything? Good. Really good. But it might be great if you'll challenge yourself. And then what's happened with people is that they like to stay in their comfort zone, doing the same thing that they did for 25 years. This is, you know, many people talk about the millennial generation. You know, that they switch a job every, you know, every time that the iPhone comes out, you know, they change a job. But, and we say, oh, for us, you know, you were a loyal employee, you were there for 35 years and you never moved. I'm not saying that this one is good or this one is good, but don't be so critical. The fact that they have the courage to change and to try to find something else can show two things: instability or really tremendous challenge to themselves to grow. And it's courage that we did not have. Okay. Also, they might have less commitments to family. They have starting families later. I'm not doing now a social analysis. But the idea is that a challenge is something that I do for myself in order to do what? In order to develop myself and to advance myself. Yes?
Yeah, there's a saying that the good is the enemy of the better. If you're satisfied with the good, you don't go for it.
So that's the entire idea of from good to great. When do you say it's good, but it can be even better? It can be great. And when you get to the great, it becomes only good. So you always, it's very, in my opinion, it's very Jewish. Really, and I'll tell you why. Well, I think I gave a speech about it in Memphis, but I don't, that I took this book, and I basically said, this is somewhat the machloket on Yom Kippur. You look at me like, what does it have anything to do with Yom Kippur? But the idea is that on Yom Kippur, there is a machloket in Gemara and Yoma. Do you need to repeat, to ask for forgiveness for sins that you didn't do this year? You confessed last year, and this year you really didn't do it. I don't know, you're really an angel, but let's say you didn't. Okay, so let's say there is one that you didn't do, okay? Do you still need to say what? Vidui for a sin that you didn't do this year. So machloket, obviously, like everything else. But the idea is, in my opinion, the opinion that says that you still need to what? To confess about a sin that you did in the past, even though you didn't do this year, is this year I have a different perspective on that sin. I have a better picture. I can look at it from a different angle. Yeah, I confessed last year because it was immediate. I knew exactly what I did. But now, in retrospective, I can look at that scene and say, you know what? There was that component that I didn't really pay attention last time, and I would like to confess on it. So the idea is that would I like to challenge myself? Or just say, no, I didn't do it, but speak, I move on. In psychology, I guess, there is an advantage not to go back to the past if you didn't do it anymore. You know, why do you want to draw back to the past? Just try to focus on. So there is obviously advantages and disadvantages to everything. But the idea is, challenges come from me, myself. What is a mashbeo? A crisis. So, how a crisis can evolve? How can it be created, a mashbeo?
Circumstances.
That dependent on whom?
Me and the
outside.
Very good. Me, above/others. Right? I have less control on mashberim. Sometimes it's all my doing, even though we like to blame everyone else for that, but it can be all my doings. Sometimes it can be from up above. I made the best investment ever, and then it was 2008, 2009, everything fell, I'm in a mashber kalkali. I'm in a financial crisis, okay? Or I took care of myself, I ran, I ate well, I was on a good diet, and, you know, what can I do? God forbid there is a health crisis.
But you failed the test. You can fail the test.
No, not yet. It's not a test.
No, but that's where the crisis occurs.
Oh, we'll talk about that in just a second. Sure. So, we have a mashber. Now, this is something very interesting.
Crisis is objective to the person.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can look at something, and you will see that in the Hebrew in a second, as a crisis or as an opportunity. The mashber is also a synonymous for a birth stool.
What?
Kise mashber. Where a woman gives birth, kise mashber, ureitem ala uvnaim, when you say, v'yoshevet ala mashber. This is a woman who gives birth, she sits on that chair, and she gives birth, which is interesting. Because on one hand is a crisis, is something bad. On the other hand is an opportunity for what? For life, for good, for positive, for future. Which is, the mashber is what? Is both in the same, it depends on your interpretation and perception or perspective or whatever it is. So this is the idea of Mashbeo. And by the way, some people... Yes?
Just had a thought. Maybe that's why Moshe Shavar and Tavukov?
Sure. Yeah. I follow what you said. Basically, he created a crisis, but he knew that he's creating a new future. By the way, in business, many times when everything goes well, you need to create an artificial crisis for the company. And why? In order to get the people from their apathy. You need to say, my gosh, there is a crisis. You know, next month we will not be able to pay any one of you. And you know what we're going to sell? And you will see everyone become very productive. Sometimes you need to create an artificial crisis. So the idea is that Mashber is really a point where you are being tested of what are you going to do with this. Are you going to take it as a new opportunity? Or are you going to what? To fall into depression and to obviously lishaver, which is what? To be broken.
To break down.
Okay, so that's the Mashber. Now let's go to Yisurin, suffering. Now, suffering can be self-afflicted, and it can be from up above, right? And it can be from others. Now, when we talk about Yisurim, what types of Yisurim are we talking about? Emotional?
Physical.
Physical, right? One of two things. Now, when I'm saying self-afflicted, what does it mean self-afflicted? I'm not talking about a guy who's beating up himself. What is self-afflicted? You saw him.
Depression.
Depression.
To suicidal tendencies.
Put yourself in a situation that you know that you're going to suffer. For example, you have, sometimes people like to look back in something that makes them sad. They look at the picture of their loved one that just died yesterday. And they know it's going to bring them tears. For some it brings comfort, but for some it brings self-afflicting. Or they go to a party that they hate each one of the participants. Okay, they hate being there, but they put themselves in that condition. That's called self-afflicting. Some people call it stupidity, but I will call it self-afflicting, okay? You go to the place that you know you hate. You were there 2 days ago and you hated it. It's the same people, it's going to be the same conversations, and you know you're going to suffer. And you come home, and you say, I knew that. And then 2 days later, you get an invitation, and what do? You go back. Okay. So that's self-afflicting. Now, then you have what? You have from up above, which will be what? If you believe in Hashgacha Pratit, in its, I don't want to call it in its fullest, but to the extent that everything comes from God, even, you know, some physical pain or illnesses and diseases. So then you will say, what? This is Yisurim. And then what does it mean by others? You are being captured and you are in prison and they torture you. And they obviously create Yisurim for you, and that's from others. Okay. What's the purpose of Yisurim? Now, this is becoming now a universal theological question.
Yeah.
What is the purpose of Yisurim? One is, it's a punishment. One is, an nisayon. One is, create a mashber. The only thing is that we're not going to call it etgar. Why? Because this is me putting myself in it. Okay? So basically, that's what we're going to see again and again when we read most of the Mefarshim. It might be a punishment. It might be a nisayon. Now, a punishment is God needs to what? To wake me up. Here, God sees that I have the opportunity, I have the potential, and He just wants to what? To expose it. And here, He wants also to what? To place in front of me what? The ability to have a better future. Now, we're going to... It's really nice to do it like that now. I'm thinking about it. Good. What are the problems with each one of them? Punishment. If it's a punishment, obviously the question is...
Why me?
Why? Why me? Why now? Why not you? Okay? Why? If it's a nisayon, what do we say? Can I do without? Can you please not give me suffering so I will have the opportunity? And then if we say it's a mashbel, yeah, also to place in front of you this idea of that, you know, you can have a future. Just why do we need to go with
it?
Just let me do it by myself. Let me challenge myself. Which means what? In every place we will go to try to understand Yisurim, you will have a question of why now, why me, can I do without? Which will, at the end, will bring us, it will be very inappropriate probably to say, to a dead end. Okay, to a dead end. Because we don't know why, and we don't know.
But we don't know.
Oh, so, therefore, and that will lead us to, not yet.
The question for Christ, for Mashbeah being, how do I get out of this, or how do I change? How?
Oh, okay, good. Very good. You're talking about the question that will come out of it. Okay, good. The how. Very good. Therefore, when you will see all the challenges that we have for each one of them, of the options, you might ask maybe a different question. And that's what we will see at Rav Soloveitchik. Saying, look, instead of asking questions that you have zero control over the answer, zero, maybe you should ask a question that you have 100% control over, which is?
What can I do? What?
What to get out of it?
Not to get out of it.
You can't get out of it.
How can I pass?
How can I deal with it? Exist within this?
What can I do with it now? Okay, this is the situation. To dwell on the question of why it happens to me, it's so terrible, and you know, self-pity and all of it. There is advantage. There is, you know, there is something into it. But at the end of the day, it doesn't help you. Therefore, ask a question that you can give an answer to. What am I going to do about it? What am I going to do with it?
Right.
There is an inspirational life story of the, I forgot his name, he was a movie star in the Back to the Future. What's his name? He had Parkinson. Michael J. Fox, okay?
Right.
He had Parkinson. And at the, you know, it was self-pity, he went into drinking and went to Machon Gmilah, to a rehab center and all of it. And his wife really was very supportive of him. And now he has a foundation for what?
Parkinson.
For Parkinson. People donate and he put in research. He did something good with it. Now, would he do it without getting Parkinson?
No.
I don't want to speak on his behalf. I'm not sure he was that involved with Parkinson if he would not have it. But the idea is, I'm not saying that it was, God forbid, good that he got chas v'shalom, really. But the idea is, I'm not going there. I don't know why he had Parkinson. No idea. I don't know why a head of an organization for whatever disease did it because his child died, God forbid, his wife died. I'm not going there. It happened. You want to blame God, you want to blame your wife, you want to blame the doctor, you want to blame yourself, do whatever you want. The question is, what do you do the next day after you woke up in the morning? What do you do? Which sometimes it's even a more challenging question. It's a more difficult question. And you know why? Because you need to give an answer. The question of why is just, it's like going in circles again and 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 then what? Okay, why it happened? Oh, because you were not good. Why was I not good? Because you didn't fulfill all the commandments, okay? What did I didn't fulfill? Oh, this one. Because I didn't fulfill this one, you give me such a punishment? Why? Oh, because you didn't fulfill all the commandments. Because I didn't fulfill all the commandments, I got that punishment? Sure, why? Because you didn't do this thing. Because I didn't do this thing, that's the punishment I got? Why? You got me? Good. it's an endless cycle.
Called rumination.
What is it called?
It's called rumination.
Rumination. Okay. You just go around and around and around the room, I guess, and you go nowhere. You're chasing your own tail or whatever they call it. Yes.
I'm very familiar with all of this. My husband was rehab counselor. In his mid-50s, the doctor made a mistake. He lost his leg. Now, what happens when you're an amputee? The first thing they teach you is to fall down.
Right.
Now, you fell down. Now you have a challenge, a test, whatever. You have to pick yourself up. And you don't pick yourself up, you lay there. Whether you become a widow, whether you get Parkinson's, an amputee, whatever. We moved to Israel, and somebody said to my husband, "Oh, you're an amputee? What did that mean to you?" He said, "It was one of the best things that happened to me because I was able to speak to my clients who were legally blind, who were facing challenges, and I told them about my challenge." Mm-hmm. So each of us has a test. Hasfakhli should happen. You should lose a leg, become blind. But whether you become a widow or you get Parkinson's or... Robert Weinstein says nobody goes through life without a pecula. You just have to know how to deal with it.
So the idea is, very good. So the idea is, thanks for sharing that one. The idea is what? Is that stop looking at why it happened to me. See what could you do with it for yourself, and even more so, for others. This is an interesting thing. You know, when we talk about this called Yetziat Mitzrayim, to remember Yetziat Mitzrayim, there are many reasons for it. But none of them is so you know you were a slave and you should go into depression. Or you should ask yourself, you know, why was I a slave in Egypt? That's never the case. The case is always what? That you should remember Exodus. Why? So you will love the convert. So you will take care of the needy. So you will make sure to leave in the field something for the poor people. So you will make sure that no needy person will go without a meal for Yom Tov. That you will know not to cheat in weights. Meaning the idea is that you remember what's happened in the past and you don't ask, okay, why was I a slave? Okay, I'll tell you because of why. Because God made a covenant with Avram and he told him. Obviously, you would ask me what? Why? And then why? And I will get, and I'll tell you, you know what? Ask God after 120. I don't have an answer for you. The idea is, how do you pick yourself up? And I will tell you that this is definitely one of the most unique characteristic of the Jewish people. This is amazing. It is really an amazing thing when you look at Jewish history. We have all the opportunities and definitely have the right to give up on everyone. Ourselves, God, the other nations, humanity. And what did we do? We picked ourselves up and we tried to teach the world to do the same. I mean, when you think about the uniqueness of the Jewish people, I mean, and that's, in my opinion, it's a divine character. Really. Characteristic. Thank you. Characteristic. So the idea is that when we talk about, you know, suffering and we talk about, you know, we need to understand, and we'll see that Bezrat Hashem, you know, in more elaborated way with Rav Soloveitchik, but to understand, it's the what question. Now, some people, it's a good introduction for next week, some people will say, you know what, it sounds good on paper, but you are ignoring the elephant in the room. Because people always look for reasons. You know, people always look for reasons. And what do you tell me, that I cannot ask why? No. So I want to be very clear. Because when we read Rav Soloveitchik, we'll see how he goes back and forth. And obviously he was very influenced by some philosophers. But the idea is that I'm not telling you not to ask why. I'm just telling you not only to ask why. We can ask why. And you know what? Different reasons works for different people. I'll tell you, I'll be very honest with you. And you know what? We should never judge anyone. Some people went through tragedy in their life and they fully believe that God did it for a reason that they know exactly what it is. If it makes them more comfortable, leave it alone. It's not for us to educate them for their own loss. the only thing that we need to try to help is if they are only dwelling on the why and they don't do anything with it, then we need to try to help. But don't judge any answers being given to people. Really. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you hear things that you are like, what are they saying? You know, they come and say to you, this one got sick, or God forbid, or this one is dead because of A, B, and C. And all of that, God takes only the good ones, and, he leaves us all with the... So, I don't know, whenever they said it, so I feel bad. Like, what, I'm a bad person? But I don't want to go. God takes only the good people. And so what about all the rest of us? We are bad people, God forbid. But you know what? It works for people. For some people, it gives them tremendous amount of comfort. Leave it the way it is. Why do you care? Good for them. The thing is, we need to ask, what? What can we do with it? By the way, as the person who suffered, but also others who did not. Shlomo HaMelech said something brilliant. Tov lalechet el beit avel milechet el beit amishte v'achai hiten elibo. People forget the last three words of the sentence. It's better sometimes to go to a house of mourners rather than to a party, because obviously in a party you cannot learn too much. In a house of mourners you definitely learn one thing, that you are not going to be here forever. But v'achai hiten elibo, which means what? The living, the person who is alive, needs to what? To bring it to his heart. It's not only just to go to house, to the house of mourners and just to say, "Amakom yinachem otcha," it's eternally both take the lessons. That's why we need to talk about the deceased, not about something else. You need to bring it into your heart so you know what to do. He's dead, gamano. But what can you learn in order to make your life a better life? Yes?
Even beyond that, it creates an opportunity for chesed, because when other people see somebody suffering or someone in need, at least the Jewish response is supposed to be to come to that person's aid. So you need both. I mean, the person, again, not why, but it's a consequence.
Right.
Not just to teach other people, but to it creates an opportunity for more chesed.
Good. And what you said, basically, the Gemara, the Midrash says, in the time of Mashiach, would we still have poor people? Answer is yes. Ki lo yichdal evyon mikerev haaretz. Why? I think Antinous asked Rabbi, if God can take care of everyone, why do we have poor people? And I think Rabbi Akiva answered, I think it was Rabbi Akiva and Antinous, says to him, so we can do tzedakah. Now, no one here wants to be the poor guy, right? No one. Everyone wants to be the wealthy guy. But still, there is the idea that if you know that there is someone who is not as fortunate as you, and by the way, it has nothing necessarily to be with money or wealth. It can be some people can be very wealthy and can be very poor at the same time, not financially, emotionally, family, socially, whatever it is. So, yes.
I just want to say one thing. For most people, it's very easy to be the one who gives. But when you have to receive, it's much harder. Much harder for most people. I mean, there are people that are takers or whatever,
right.
But I think that sometimes God puts us in both positions,
right.
And we learn.
And you know what?
It's like
you need to, and I think it's good to be in both positions, not to be poor,
right.
Poor, but sometimes to ask for something, because you know what? As wealthy as you are, there is someone who is going to be a bit wealthier than you. As poor as you are, there is always going to be someone who is what?
Much poorer.
He is much. What is it? Poorer?
Yeah.
Poorer.
Okay. It's like poorer. Okay. So the thing is what? Is that what we will do?